This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Hi and welcome. My name is Felice Gerwitz and this is an episode of Vintage Homeschool Moms. It's actually episode 73. And today's topic is five great ideas for homeschooling. Well, this might not be exactly what you think. In fact, you may be thinking I'm going to give you some ways that you can improve on your homeschooling. And I actually have an entire month's worth of audios for this month. And so if you go to Vintage Homeschool Moms and scroll down, you'll see several podcasts on the topic of great ideas. And I was able to record a session with Meredith Curtis, and we both shared some of our top ideas for homeschooling. In this episode, I wanted to do something a little bit different. And so I'm going to begin in just a minute, but wanted to remind you that my sponsor is Media Angels. You can find books, classes, and great novels for teens at mediaangels.com. So I encourage you to visit that. I also want to give a shout out for the other show hosts on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Please visit our website and you will find great podcasts to help you with your homeschool journey. All right, well, let's get started. Today's session really goes along with my philosophy of homeschooling, which is pretty eclectic. I'm not totally against workbooks or textbooks. However, I have used both, and I've even published a fiction writing workbook by Susan Marlowe called Reach for the Stars. But I want to say that I am a big proponent of making homeschool meaningful, making it unique, and not replicating the traditional classroom. While I do use an occasional workbook and textbook, I am also going to give this little disclaimer that I like to do a lot of hands-on things with my kids. So if we can tie it in with a trip we're taking as a family, reading some books, even watching some movies on the topic, I'm all for that. I believe that real learning takes place in the world in which we live. I am not an unschooler. I really wish I could be. But it's hard to take the classroom teacher out of the homeschool teacher, even though I've homeschooled since 1986 and was a classroom teacher for a very short period of time. That is pretty entrenched. And so I have to fight a lot of, you know, those kinds of things daily when I school, because it's so much easier for me to assign my kids a workbook or a textbook and then let them work at their own pace. However, I found that when I did that in the past, they really did not retain a lot of the information. So, as I said earlier, I'm a proponent of making homeschool unique and also fun. And so with that disclaimer, I'll share with you, my five great ideas for homeschooling. So I'm going to give you these five ideas, and then I'm going to go through and elaborate a little bit more. So the first is to get rid of busy work. The second is to make school unique. The third is to find non-academic areas of interest. The fourth is alone time, and the fifth is academics. So let's start with number one, getting rid of the busy work. I think that traditional school is a great place to do busy work. You've got all these kids in a classroom. You can't address all of their needs at once. So if they're working productively on something, the teacher feels really good about herself. And I know because I've been there. So, you know, other than some things that, you know, maybe you want to give a little one a page to color or some, you know, blank paper and some colored pencils or something like that while you're working with another child, I really think that your homeschool needs to have purpose. We want to work efficiently, and we want to plan, which there's a difference between a routine and a rigid schedule, you know, so I do want to say that. But we want to give our kids work that isn't busy work. So I guess I should explain what I'm talking about when I say busy work. I'm talking about, you know, just workbooks for every subject, fill in the blanks, word search, crossword puzzle, copy work. While all of those do have their time and place, you cannot make your entire homeschool revolve around those things. You know, every once in a while it's fun to have a word search, but traditionally word searches do not help a child learn the words that they're trying to study. I have a website, Homeschooling with Proverbs, and it's an entire Bible study for the family, and I do include word searches in that set. However, it's not necessarily to teach the children the words, it's just a fun way to pass the time, because some kids, let's face it, love word search. And the reason they love it is because for most, it's very high success. But a steady diet of this really is a waste of time. I'll tell you another thing that I think is busy work, and that is spelling workbooks. To me, there is so much busy work within the pages of a spelling workbook. I have a link on the website. Again, look for podcast 73, Five Great Ideas for Homeschooling. And there you'll find the link of a spelling program that I highly, highly recommend. And you can use, you know, your children's daily writing to learn spelling. When my kids have learned to write papers, and again, this is, you know, a little bit older child, whenever they misspell a word, that word becomes a spelling word that they have to learn. And, you know, then you can even do them in groups of words. Like if they get the word there wrong, like T-H-E-I-R, you can give them that word as well as the word there, like over there, T-H-E-R-E, or they are, the contraction, T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E. So you're really teaching a combined lesson, even though only one word was misspelled. So it's that kind of thing that I think is worth so much more. You can have word lists that you give your children. Again, there are all kinds of places to get these word lists. I have a list of vocabulary words in my Teaching Science and Having Fun book that I've used with my own children that are age and grade appropriate. And this, again, makes sense. If you're learning spelling within the context of your lessons, you are going to retain that. I don't know of very many spelling rules that I personally think are worthwhile because you forget them. There are a few that are important, but then again, there's always the exception to the rule. So if you want to cut out, you know, some of the busy work, you know, use some of these other programs that are available for learning spelling that I find a lot more valuable. And, you know, I think that's very helpful. Another is handwriting. I do like Writing Without Tears. I don't remember if that's exactly what the curriculum is called. So again, I'll put the link in the podcast post on the website. However, I know that you can teach some basics in handwriting, but once they get it, you know, have them writing important things. I know there are some handwriting programs that are all Bible verses, and those are great. But you're spending money on a workbook when you can give the children perhaps a Bible passage or verse you're studying as a family or something like that. If you want to do copy work, then that's something you can work on along with handwriting. So you're really doing two things at once, you know. But after the basics, I use real assignments. Like, for example, if my children are writing a one-page synopsis of something that we've studied, then I will use that along with handwriting and say that, you know, it needs to be written well or they're going to rewrite it. Now, their dad's a real stickler for things being a lot neater than I am. And I think that was because I was did my directed study in third grade when I was getting my teaching certificate in college. And that teacher was really horrific when it came to handwriting. There was one girl who had beautiful handwriting, but it took the whole line, and he kept counting off points because it was too big. But the letters were all perfectly formed. And so I think because of that experience, I'm like so opposed to any super strict handwriting program. But just as I explained, you know, the spelling workbooks and the handwriting workbooks, all of these things have a place maybe in the younger grades, but I would really recommend not keeping up a steady diet of those things, especially all the way through elementary school, because there are so many other things that you can do to benefit the children. Even incorporating, I'm not saying don't do handwriting and don't do spelling. I'm just saying that they can be incorporated within other subjects that you're studying. Okay, so number two is make school unique by learning your child's interests and gifting or talents, and give them time, structured at first, to discover and explore. And I'm going to talk about alone time a little bit later. So let's talk about making school unique. My second oldest daughter, Christina, who I hope to interview in this series on great ideas, because she's an organization genius, and that is one of the podcasts I'm doing in this series on great ideas. But she put it like this: replicating the school at home makes kids hate school. And it really is true. I heard a mom talk about virtual school with another mom, and she said, well, my kids would hate school no matter what they were doing. But I beg to differ. I don't think that's true. I think that kids love to learn. They're naturally inquisitive, and that's what learning is all about. I always say I'm a perpetual student. I love to learn new things. And it doesn't bother me that I don't know something. I'll dive in and I'll just sometimes hack away at whatever it is, but I will, you know, learn this new thing just because I think learning is amazing. And so if you give your children the opportunity to learn new things and give them the resources, they will love learning. I alluded to that Teaching Science and Having Fun book a little bit earlier. Well, I set up clear covered boxes with science-related necessities in them. For example, I have a general science book, a science box, a biology box, a chemistry, and a physics. And so I put little things in each of those. Like, for example, in the general science box, I had measuring cups and measuring spoons and little petri dishes, because I was finding that when we were doing our science experiments, my kitchen utensils were being used and not replaced. And so I didn't want my nice, you know, kitchen measuring cups to be used. So we bought some, you know, cheaper versions to keep in this box. So it didn't bother me when the kids said, you know, hey, mom, can we take it outside and do some science stuff? And I like Janice Van Cleve's experiment book. She has some great ones for the lower grades, and I'll have a link to that as well in the podcast, in the post. But what I liked was the kids would be creative on their own. Like one time they took magnifying glasses outdoors and they were trying to burn things like leaves and paper and things like that. And of course that worked. So my little pyros were starting fires outside. Another time they took the same magnifying glasses and decided to make some more. So they put a graham cracker on a plate and a piece of chocolate, and they melted the chocolate a little bit. Then they put the marshmallow on, melted the marshmallow, and then ate their creation. So not quite exactly what I had in mind when I put these science boxes together, but still a really good, fun thing for them to do, and it was something that they enjoyed. And do you see how learning can take place? It really is amazing that the kids will come up with these things on their own. You know, we think that we have to have everything so scheduled and so organized for them, and we do, you know, to an extent. But we have to give them some time to find the things that they want to explore a little bit deeper. I remember at one point my kids were really interested in the opposite things in science. Like I always said, you know, Neil liked anything to do with outer space, and he thought that was fascinating, while Christina liked oceans, and then Christina liked oceans and Neil liked outer space. So I had one under the, you know, one under the water and one above the clouds, and it was hard sometimes to get them to like the same thing. But, you know, we wouldn't have as much time to get to some of those things, and I do regret that. you know, because it's so important, especially when you can do things that the kids can remember. We did a lot of field trips and a lot of things when they were younger. And so we talk about these things excitedly and they don't remember, like going to the space center. We went with our kids when they were younger. We have pictures of them standing with some of the older rockets. And it's in Titusville in Florida. If you've never had the opportunity to go to the Kennedy Space Center, I believe it's still called that, you know, take that opportunity and go visit. It's really a great place. Well, we didn't go back because there just didn't seem to be time. And if there was, that wasn't going to be our destination because my husband and I felt like we had already gone there. But then we, you know, really remembered that with our children, you know, they're not going to remember as much, even though we took great pictures and, you know, talked about it. That is one of the things that my daughter actually is thinking about taking her children to see. Number three, how about finding some non-academic areas of interest, such as the kids working on computers, reading, which I know is an academic, but some kids just don't have time to pleasure read, and I think that's very important. Perhaps your kids are gifted in sports, crafts. I remember one of the little boys, a friend of mine's son, always had a huge box of origami. And I remember one time he had about, you know, 40 of these little things in this big, big box. And he said, "Oh, Mrs. Gerwitz, do you want one?" And I said, "Sure," you know, and I randomly picked one out, and that was his favorite one. So I said, "Oh, well, I can't take your favorite one." So I picked another one out, and that was his second favorite one. So I finally said to him, "Well, why don't you pick out one that you want to give me?" And he gave, you know, he was able to part with one of his little origami creations. But, you know, it's just fun. That's something that he loved, and he made a ton of them. You know, maybe your kids are interested in video creation or graphics or building or engine repair or writing for fun. You know, these are all things that if you give your child some opportunity and some time that they can take some time to do. And I want to share with you just a few of the things that my children have begun exploring. And I am going to admit that not all of, you know, out of five kids, I have three that have just flourished at home finding, you know, their love, their hobby, or something that they enjoy doing. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate into a job. You know, as parents, we're so quick to want to, you know, help them out with their future and, you know, guide them along the way. But at least it's something that they've been able to explore and then make a decision if they want to move toward that direction as an adult. And so, you know, for my second oldest, Christina, she and I co-authored the series of novels, the Truth Seekers Mystery Series. And Christina worked very diligently in high school. She did a lot of self-directed study. And the reason for that was she wanted to be done so that she could work on her writing. Now, at this time, writing didn't translate into a full-time job for Christina. She still talks about continuing the series. You know, we talk about it from time to time. But, you know, right now her vocation is as wife and mother, you know, to a whole bunch of little ones. So, you know, it's still something that she loved doing while she was a homeschooled, you know, student. And we even finished the series when she was in college. So, you know, that was something that she loved doing, and it really occupied her time, and it was something that was more than a hobby because it translated into like a little mini career at the time. All right. My son Nick loved repairing things. I started out with my Cuisinaire mixer that he was able to get fixed very quickly and very inexpensively, and I think it took like a $10 part that he overnighted from, you know, the store because it was so inexpensive. And he was able to fix my mixer, and he was teasing me because I was astounded that he could fix this, you know, hundreds of dollars mixer. It's a big, you know, stand mixer with this little cheap part. And he said, "You know, that's right, Mom, but my service call is $75. And of course, we laughed about that. And no, he did not get $75. For the repair, but the idea here is, you know, he found something he really enjoyed doing, and He started fixing my husband's construction tools. He fixed our weed eater and our blower and our, you know, lawnmower and just other things. And so word got around. And soon lawn repair people that we knew were bringing their tools to my son to fix because, you know, he would charge $20 an hour, whereas a you know, regular business would charge $80. And so, you know, he did this for a few years, and then he found when he graduated from high school that it wasn't something he wanted to do full time. In fact, he did the course by Carol Topp that I've talked about before, Micro Business for Teens. And when he did his business plan, he found that, you know, even if he started charging $80 an hour and had, you know, two full-time people with overhead and working full-time himself, and some of the things like you have to be open on weekends at least till noon on Saturday and other things that he had to consider, he just decided that that was just too labor intensive for him, and especially for the first couple of years if he was trying to build a business. So, but again, it was something he learned, he enjoyed doing, and that was not necessarily an academic, but something he taught himself to do. And yes, he did get some credit for that. All right, so, and then there's Anne. She hasn't quite found what her, you know, gifting is, but one of the things that I notice she does naturally is she is a really good critic. So she can read something and then tell me what she thinks needs to be changed or made better. And she did that, you know, with the novels that her sister wrote. It, you know, they came back sticky tabbed of things that she thought we needed to change. And I told her when we go to reprint, we will actually consider some of her critique because it was very good. And so, you know, I don't know what she's going to do for the future. She plays sports and that really seems to be a focus right now. But that is, again, something that, you know, she does naturally. Mike, on the other hand, I talked about him before and in previous shows where he has done some videos using Legos. And he's really good at it. And he does these stop motion videos. And right now he's working on an introduction and some other things. He also had to teach himself how to use some programs. There's one out there. It's called GIMP. And I will put the link for that in the show notes. And it is like Photoshop, but it's free. And so I've used that program before. And he and I sat down one afternoon and I showed him some of the shortcuts that I knew, which are very limited. It's a very, very complex photograph editing program. But again, another thing that I had no idea he was interested in video. It's out of my pay grade. I don't know, you know, how to teach it. But as a homeschooler, one of the amazing things I have found is the kids that are self-taught, that will watch the videos on how to do it, that will, you know, learn alongside, you know, their parents or are given the time and opportunity to do it, do an amazing job and learn amazingly well. We were cleaning out some things at my mother-in-law's recently, and there was a huge box of needles and yarn and things like that. And we ended up giving it to my daughter because my granddaughter is very crafty. And that child came over last night for dinner with her family. She's 8 years old. And she's already learned how to knit. I mean, it's remarkable to me that she's picked it up with these huge knitting needles. My grandmother used to knit, you know. My mother didn't. My mother sewed, and I hot glue, kind of like skipped a generation. And so I'm just completely floored. You know, she didn't have to take this huge course. You know, they went on, they looked at some videos and learned how to do it. And, you know, people immediately gravitate to YouTube, but there's another website I will put on there. You need to really look at what you want to view and not making any recommendations about particular videos. But, and you do have to pay for them, but I find them really, really well done and not very expensive. Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I will finish up with a few more points. Are you looking for a Bible study for the entire family? Well, I created one after searching for months for a study that would encourage my family to have group discussions, teach life truth, as well as point to God as creator. So since I couldn't find one, I created one, Homeschooling with Proverbs. I didn't want to zoom through the book of Proverbs in 1 month, as some suggest. Instead, I wanted to savor and meditate on the words and have the entire family on the same page. If you want a Bible study written for the entire family with specific audios and activities from pre-K to adult, look no further. This set can be used studying one lesson per month or completed in 9 months or sooner. The option is yours. In this set, you will find audios, printables, and when completed, you and your children will have a beautiful keepsake notebook. Visit homeschoolingwithproverbs.com for more information and begin studying the book of Proverbs. Allow God's word to speak to you. Hi, and welcome back. This is Felice Gerwitz, and it's episode 73, Five Great Ideas for Homeschooling. And we've been covering some fun ideas on what I consider, you know, core ideas for homeschooling. You know, it's not so much, go to this website or do this thing. It's more of tied into my philosophy of education, especially home education. And I shared with you that earlier that I'm a proponent of making homeschool unique and not replicating traditional school. And so trying to share with you some ideas that are a little bit outside of the box from the normal, you know, great ideas for homeschooling. In fact, when I looked at a lot of the Pinterest boards and things like that to maybe give you some links for those things, I found a lot of replicas of, you know, traditional school ideas. So if you have some great Pinterest boards that you would like me to add to the show notes, go ahead and send me an email, and I would love to consider those. Okay, so we covered the first three things: getting rid of busy work, making school unique, finding non-academic areas of interest. And now I'm going to cover number 4 and 5, alone time, and then academics. Well, let's look at alone time. What is alone time? It is time to think unplugged. That means no video games, no television, no computer. Just to reflect, explore, and think. And so, you know, in that unplugged time or that alone time, that gives kids, you know, a time to find themselves. You know, I know that's like really overrated, and I'm a product of the 70s when I was in high school, and, you know, a late 70s in college. And, you know, well, I don't know who I am and I need to find myself. But, you know, in some ways, do you really know who you are and what you enjoy doing? And I think, you know, sometimes people who don't know what their passions are or find them later in life really feel like they've missed out. Like, for example, I never knew that I loved to write as much as I do now. And if I knew that earlier, I might have had a different course of study than education. You know, I may have gone into journalism, or even, as much as I love podcasting, you know, into broadcast. But I didn't know that because I was in school and I was doing my academics as I was taught and not really given time to just sit back and think. And when I did have free time, I was a reader, and I loved reading series of books. And so that's how I spent my time. And sure, reading is great and it's wonderful to escape reality, but it's not really a time where you can just, you know, be alone and think. And so that's something that I ask my children to do. And one of the things that is, you know, I start out with structure and then I back off a little bit. And especially when they're younger, you want to give them some structure. So if they're younger, you want to start with something like a journal. You know, you can give them their Bibles and have them maybe, you know, read a little Bible verse and think about it and maybe come back and talk to you about it. But that's a little bit too close to, you know, what you might be doing in their classroom studies anyway. Or maybe you're reading the Bible verse or passage to them, and then you're discussing it as a family. You know, I don't know what your method of, you know, Bible is. But this is different, where the child, you know, might be able to go back to their room and maybe journal about what they've read or what you've talked about as a family, or just journal about the day. It's very difficult for children to just pick up a journal and write, and I'm going to say for most children, not all. And so that's why you could start them with a little prompt, you know, start them out with a sentence that they can begin with. You know, today the one thing I enjoyed was, today I liked this food we had at breakfast. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It just gives them a little bit of time to start writing. I probably will do an entire podcast at some point on journaling, because it really is a great way to introduce your child to a non-pressure way of writing. Again, this is not the place to check for handwriting or spelling, even though you may be appalled if you read their journal. If they're older and they want their journal private, that's between you know, you and your family to make a decision about that. I think that kids, to an extent, need privacy. You know your child best, and you know we don't want to, you know, start perpetuating secrets, but we do want to give our kids time to kind of be themselves. You know, I know when I was talking to a friend who took her child out of the school system, and we are going to do a podcast about that as well for those who have had their kids in traditional schools and then have begun homeschooling. And she said her son just wanted to sit outside, lay out in the grass, and look at the sky. And she said, you know, at first she just thought, you know, okay, well, it's just for today. But it was like every day for weeks, he spent some time just laying out on the grass and doing nothing. And, you know, I was thinking of myself in that situation. I would probably be panicking and saying, oh my gosh, we've got this to do and that to do. And she just said she knew that he just needed to unwind. And, you know, he was so stressed in school, and he was a bright kid, and she wasn't worried about academics, and, you know, that after a while he was able to unwind. And so, you know, that's good to know. It's good to be able to just sit and just relax, just sit and have time to think. And when, you know, when I talk about this alone time, that also doesn't mean having music on or the radio. Alone time is not the same as free time. And we're going to talk about that in our organization podcast, about giving your kids some, you know, structured time that is, you know, that is their free time. And what I mean by structured is, if you say to this is typically, okay, there's always an exception to the rule, but if you say to kids, go ahead and do whatever you want, they're going to gravitate to whatever is probably something you don't want them doing. You know, I'm not a big fan of any kind of video games or handheld games or any of that stuff. I just think it's such a time waster, but I do allow my children some time to, you know, that's their downtime. But, you know, you can give them some things and suggestions to do. For example, if they're little, you can have some puzzles, you can have, you know, things for them to paint. You can have clay. You can let them use glitter outdoors. Is my whole thing with glitter. I'm not a glitter fan either. But whatever it is, you're giving them some structure and some suggestions. You know, when you get done with your school, you can do these things. Or you can, as they get older, give them time to do the things that they really want to do. You know, and if it is a video game or something like that, and that's incentive for them to get done, then you're probably going to be able to, you know, come to some compromise and acquiesce on that. So, you know, whatever that is, it just know that alone time is a little bit different than free time, where they're exploring something that they want to do. This is just a little bit of time to think. It doesn't need to be hours of time, but just, you know, consider that under the category of some great ideas to make your homeschool different and give your kids some time. The fifth is academics. You know, while they're little, you're going to choose what you want your children to learn. But when they get older, You want to have them involved. When we would go to homeschool conferences, one of the best things that I ever did was take my children along to help me find the math curriculum they wanted to use, to help me find some history novels they wanted to read, to help me find, you know, some science experiment kits they wanted me to buy. And that was wonderful. You know, every conference we bought at least one game. You know, we have a closet full of games, and thankfully I have a daughter I can pass them on to. I feel badly that we didn't play as many as we, you know, as I bought. There are some that are brand new. And one of the things that I did was I set aside Fridays when they were little. And again, we're going to talk more about that with the organization and scheduling. And we would have that as game day. However, there was always this little carrot, you know, that was dangled over game day. And that was you had to get your work done. Because if you didn't, Friday was typically a field day. Friday was a day, a catch-up day if you weren't done with your work from the week. So as they got older, we didn't have the luxury of giving them all day Friday off to be able to do that. So, you know, again, however you structure that, while the games are mostly academic and fun, you know, sometimes I just didn't feel like we had that extra time to do that. But you do want to involve the children, you know, in selecting some of their classes, especially the electives for high school. You know, we've talked about their reading lists, and, you know, we've had to make some compromises. Because I always feel that as a parent, I'm the one who gets to make the final decision. You know, of course, their dad's involved as well. But sometimes we feel that we are so behind that we need to cram in a ton of work, and even a PhD couldn't handle all of the requirements we sometimes heap on our kids, right? So, you know, you can look at the course code requirements for your state. If you want to find them, you know, I can just Google course codes Florida and the website will pop up. So, you know, that just gives you some ideas of what, you know, is required in your state for graduation from high school. So you'll have an idea. And I'll have some links to other shows on this network that discuss high school credits. There are some really good shows that went into things like such as transcripts and things like that. You know, however, while I had some children that were college bound, it doesn't mean you can't add fun classes. For example, I have friends whose kids study Chinese and they fence, you know, and, you know, when I heard about the fencing, I thought, oh, well, that's really nice, but what are they going to do with that? Well, I think both of her children ended up fencing in college, so it's amazing, and they went on to, you know, place regionally and on the state level and so forth. My kids, the two older ones, learned how to scuba dive because that was something, you know, we parents were interested in teaching our children. My husband was a reluctant scuba diver, but at the time, he was the one who took the children because I had a little one and I couldn't do it. I loved scuba diving when I did it in college. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, something expensive. It can be gardening. I knew of a young man who started an organic garden and his mom counted it for botany class. So it can be, you know, the sky's the limit when it comes to things like that. Contact someone who is really good at it in your state. I have a really good friend of mine. We're having lunch next week. So we can go over my kids' transcripts and fine-tune some things. I've got one who is a ninth grader and one who's an 11th grader. And so I want to look at, you know, what they've accomplished. And part of the issue with homeschooling is that we get so much more done. They both really, if I looked at just their credits, could graduate today. But we want homeschooling to be more of an academic experience. We want it to be a mirror, a real life experience. You know, I did a session recently, and I'm not going to share more about it. It's for a documentary coming up in case they cut it all out. You know, I don't want to share that information yet, but I hope to in an upcoming podcast. But in the presentation that I did, it's like a little cameo, you know, maybe 1 minute will be pulled out of the video that I did. But I explain that homeschooling is really a study of the world around us. We homeschoolers make it a lifestyle. It isn't what we do, it's who we are. And I even podcasted about that at one point. And, you know, if you don't know what kind of homeschooler you are, go and take the little informal test that I have in that podcast. But I really want you to look at these ideas and add your own. What are your great ideas for homeschooling? You know, is it studying literature for the year? I had a friend who, she was actually my co-author on the creation science series, Jill Whitlock. Her boys were way ahead. So she took a whole year off, which I couldn't believe, and I know I couldn't do this, but she did it, and they just studied great literature. And that was it. You know, I think she may have added a little bit of math, you know, curriculum to it. But she tied in all of her subjects in the study of literature. They were able to learn some science through that. They were able, you know, to learn geography. They learned, of course, you know, language arts skills, creative writing, you know, creative thinking, and so forth. And her boys did really, really well academically. So, you know, whatever that is, whatever your great idea is, you know, please share it with me. You can write me at felice@mediaangels.com. You can leave a message on this post on Vintage Homeschool Moms. Look for podcast 73, Five Great Ideas for Homeschooling. And as always, keep in touch. We're on social media everywhere with the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, and we love hearing from you. So if you've enjoyed this podcast, drop me a line, visit us on iTunes and give us a rating. I've been really bad about asking about that, so I'm going to be ramping that up and asking more often. And also share this broadcast with your friends. So thank you, God bless, and talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.